Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, what's going on, man?
Word up, homie.
Ooh, I don't like when you say that.
Why not?
I don't know. The whole word up, homie, just doesn't work for you, man.
Do I need a better introduction?
I think you need to be like more like, oh, hey, how are you, Kyle?
Well, hello there, Kyle. I just finished my trigonometry homework, and I'm looking forward to discussing a little bit of a post-World War II economic blast.
Let's be honest. Neither one of us could do trig.
Oh, gosh, no. That's no joke.
Yeah, I don't think the writers of the movie we're covering this week could either, because got a lot to discuss here as we get into Idle Hands. But before we dive into it, we want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, and YouTube. That'll make sure you guys never miss an episode. That's the best way to help support the show. And do us one favor. This doesn't take you more than 30 seconds, 60 seconds at the most. Find us on Apple Podcasts or any of those platforms. Give us a 5-star ranking, and that's going to help boost us up. Give us better rankings, more followers, more money. We don't make any, but at some point we'd like to. What's the Adam Sandler movie where he's like, I like money. I'd like to make more of it. And that's where you come in, sir. Wedding Singer. Boom.
Yep, there you go.
In our archives. Yeah.
Jinx, buy me a Coke. You owe me beer and pizza as well. Eat it.
Gosh, I owe you a lot of stuff now. Pizza, beer, Coke.
Coca-Cola, mind you, for our audience members
Not the booger sugar?
No booger sugar.
Okay. JD, let's talk about last week, man. We discussed Bloodsport. What was your feedback on our Bloodsport episode?
Kumite, kumite, kumite. That's all I got. People just are chanting kumite at me.
Man, I went and watched that Mentos commercial. That is amazing.
Isn't it?
It's so good. I don't think we talked about the Mentos commercial enough in hindsight.
Well, we could have done a whole episode just on the Mentos commercial.
Future episode. Break it down, frame by frame. There's a lot going on there, a lot to discuss. Real quick before I forget, shout out to Ben from Angry Dad Podcast for joining us on Bloodsport. I thought he was great.
Oh, fantastic. And the whole conception of us doing that episode was based on his excitement of, he was like, I'm going to do my best Ben impression. When the fuck y'all doing Bloodsport? was that decent?
That was Ben? Pretty good.
Don't beat me up, Ben.
I think you got to get the energy up if you want to do Ben. But
you think Ben's more of a puncher or a kicker?
I think he'd punch a hole through both of our faces, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We might be able to get a nut punch in and run away, though. Good move. We talked about it in the Bloodsport episode. I'm just saying. It's a solid move.
Second best, there's a punch to the nuts or kick to the nuts.
Yep.
Second best move in a fight, poop on your hands, and then just run at your opponent with poopy hands. They're not going to fight you.
I would say maybe like hairspray to the eyes.
And that'd work. No, because I would close my eyes and kick you in the nuts.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. You'd go full blood sport on me, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and just go blind. Well, let's get to the reason we're here, man. Ready to dive into some Idle Hands. Idle Hands is a 1999 American horror comedy film directed by Rodman Flender. Not Dennis Rodman. That would have been nice, though. Written by Terry Hughes and Ron Milbearer. Milbauer? It doesn't matter. Starring Devin Sawa, Seth Green, Eldon Henson, Jessica Alba, and Vivica A. Fox. The main plot follows the life of a average lazy stoner teenager, Anton Tobias, played by Sawa, whose hand becomes possessed and goes on a killing spree even after being cut off of his arm. The film's title is based on the saying, "Idle hands are the devil's playthings," or "Idle hands do the devil's work." The film was a critical and commercial failure, grossing a little over $4 million on an estimated $25 million budget. Of course, if you want to hear more about the numbers and the critic response, go back into our teaser trailer episode and check that out. We break it down. We listen to the original movie trailer, and it's a good time. I like the teaser trailer episodes. Plus, they're good if you're in a hurry. You just want to get 30 minutes in. Like that one was 22. Check it out. Good episode. JD, I want to talk a little bit about why you think the movie was such a big failure and why the heck it cost $25 million to make this thing.
A movie like this, it's difficult. You know, it's very creative in the sense that it's a mixture of horror and comedy, and you throw a bunch of heartthrobs in there. Obviously, Eldon Henson is fantastic. He's just a sexy individual. Where do we know him from, Kyle?
Mighty Ducks, Fulton.
In our archives. It's one of those movies that if this came out in current days, it would probably be video on demand. It wouldn't be theatrical.
Right.
Possibly a Blumhouse movie, maybe an A24. But it just was such a, covers so many different avenues and grounds for entertainment that I don't think anybody was really able to sink their teeth into it. And where the budget went, probably all to chopping off Eldon's head.
I think that is a great point by you with Blumhouse. This could totally be a Blumhouse movie that they made for like $4 million. And then they probably would have marketed it better, so it would have made like $20 million at the box office. So yeah, I agree with that. One of the things I think that is really good about this movie, though, is the soundtrack. I think the soundtrack is awesome. We got a lot of really good bands in here. Blink 182, The Offspring, Rob Zombie, Static X, Unwritten Law, Motley Crue's in here. I mean, JD, what do you think about the soundtrack?
Fantastic soundtrack. And, you know, if for those of you who either missed our poll or had a chance to do our recent poll, obviously, if you vote on top five soundtracks, we would get into an episode where we really dig and dive into how fantastic movie soundtracks can be. And we've had a lot of great opportunities doing this podcast to talk about some movies that have had some great soundtracks. And this is definitely up there. After watching this movie, right to Spotify, and I, you know, was listening through the tracks and reminding myself of, geez, when's the last time anyone's listened to or talked about Static X?
Yeah, it's been a while. I was never a big Static X fan. This is going to hurt a little bit because I know Phantom Dark Dave loves him. I was never a Rob Zombie guy either. Offspring, yes. Blink 182, yes, ma'am. Yeah, anything around that like punk rock to like harder, a little bit harder rock, I like that. But never got into the metal phase.
Oh, so that's too bad. I'm with Dave on it. I was a fan of Rob Zombie, White Zombie, which is why when he first came out with House of a Thousand Corpses, I was so excited. I was like, holy moly, I like this guy's music. And then loved his movies.
Yeah, it's strange because I love Rob Zombie the filmmaker. Don't like Rob Zombie the artist. I've never been a
fan. What do you think he smells like? I bet he doesn't smell good.
I would say like probably a mix of marijuana and incense candles.
Yeah, a lot of marijuana.
Sherry Moon, though, well done by him. Are you getting so quiet? Awkward. Don't make it weird.
I was just gonna do awkward silence there, and then you made it weird by calling out on the awkward silence.
With that being said, I think the soundtrack's awesome. If I would have had my license at the time this movie came out, I probably would have picked this up and rocked it in my Camaro.
Bastard.
You bastard. What kind of car did you have again?
In high school, I rocked a Chevy S10 pickup truck.
I don't see you as a pickup truck guy.
It was my grandfather's, who was a carpenter, and after he passed, it was the only thing he left to anybody in my family, and he left me that pickup truck.
Nice. How long did it last?
I probably had it for about 8 or 9 years. It died right after college.
Okay. Yeah, if we were friends in college, I probably would have remembered the pickup truck, but you suck. Last thing I want to talk about in regards to the soundtrack. Did you know there's actually 2 cameos in this movie from members of 2 different bands?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah, did you know that?
Did I know that? I know Offspring. I caught that one.
You don't know the other one?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, I love it. I cannot wait. You'll know once we get to the drive-through scene. That's when it happens. I will point it out to you.
Oh, you rickety bastard.
You're going to be so excited. I don't think you'll be able to guess who it actually is.
It's Tom DeLonge from Blink-182.
I hate you for looking that up.
I didn't look it up. I just remembered it.
No. You remember?
No, I knew because I was getting confused between this and then Blink in American Pie. And I totally forgot that that's who it was because I watched this movie like a whole 3 days ago. And I got so over enveloped by the Offspring scenes. And then once you said that, I totally had space on it. So I could have played it off better. So you thought I was just like some sort of mind gypsy. But
do you think this movie has become a cult film? Do you think it's reached that kind of status? Because it's mentioned like that in Wikipedia, but I don't know that I agree with that.
I would definitely say no. It's not for... I would be surprised if we get a good response on downloads for this episode, because it's either you know it and you love it, or you've never heard of it. Audience, download!
Let's go on break. We'll be back on the other side with the full review.
Hey, this is Phantom Dark Dave, and I'm the host of Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. Right now, you're listening to the Back in Time podcast, which features Kyle and JD, who have both been on my podcast. So if you're listening here, you need to listen to them there and come check me out. Got everything from horror, science fiction, comic books and cartoons, and some outstanding comedy if you just like shooting the breeze. You can find me over on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and Google Play.
All right, we're back from the break. Let's jump into it, man. The film begins with a very creepy score here. Kind of sets a weird tone. And we see like this bloody face in a puddle. And I just thought these graphics were so late 90s, were they not?
Oh, yeah, they are. A lot of this movie doesn't age well.
It's Halloween. Anton's house is decorated. And as we go inside the house, we meet Anton's parents first. The dad is played by Fred Willard. JD, are you a Fred Willard fan at all?
Oh, you know it. Anchorman, mother effer.
He's great in Anchorman. Gosh, I'm struggling to remember anything else he's done. But it seems like he always pops up, and I always love him in whatever he's doing. But, I mean, has he ever been the leading man on something?
I'm sure he has. If he hasn't, there needs to be a movie with him and Eugene Levy as the leads together.
Oh, gosh, that'd be great. The classic dad and the classic eyebrows. So they just turn off the lights to go to bed, and the mom starts screaming, and we look up on the ceiling, and it says, "I'm under the bed." Dad thinks it's just Anton, and his dad makes the comment that Anton wouldn't scoot his behind off the couch if the house was on fire. They hear a banging noise, and the dad again thinks it's nothing, probably just a cat outside. So he goes to investigate, and a few minutes pass, we hear the dad yell. A couple pans cling, and the mom goes to see what's going on with the dad when she slips on the floor, and we see it's all covered in blood, and she yells for Anton, races up to the bedroom, and she's about to dial 911 when the phone is yanked out of her hand, and she's pulled underneath the bed, and we just see blood splatter everywhere. JD, what do you think of our opening scene? And we're quickly into 2 different death scenes.
This is, you know, from a writing standpoint, this is kind of what you learn 101 as you start your story with a bang. And that's exactly what we do with Idle Hands. Like, we have Fred Willard, and he's a fantastic actor, and he's great stage presence. And the first thing they do is they murder his butt. Murder his butt. T-shirt coming soon.
Hey, would you say that they start with a bang. DDP?
Yes, I would say that, Kyle. Thank you for isolating all of our audiences that don't watch wrestling.
I don't know. I think we're all pretty into it.
Ladies, Kyle doesn't know.
Why do you assume the ladies don't like it? That's really gender specific there, man. I'm upset with you.
Okay, aliens who haven't visited Earth that have intercepted our transmissions.
The next morning, we cut to Anton, played by Devin Sawa. JD, what's your favorite Devin Sawa movie, and why is it For Sure Casper?
It's not For Sure Casper. Okay. It's pronounced regular Casper, and it's obviously Little Giants.
Is that your favorite?
Yeah, okay. I said obviously. Why would I bullshit you?
I don't know. I feel like you're trying to pull one over on me. I don't think that's my favorite Devin Sawa movie. I would probably go with Final Destination, if I'm being honest.
Oh, that's interesting. And I'm supposed to believe you. Why?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, yeah.
We've done a lot of episodes. I would feel like there's some trust there.
No, I feel like we're getting off on the wrong foot. We're sort of missing each other's tempo. Yeah, I know. This is our worst episode. I hate this episode. Like, can we just rewind and start all over and you not be a cocky little a-hole?
Hey, fuckface. Is SLC Punk a guilty pleasure of yours? Because I love him in that one.
No, but kicking you in the nuts, Corn Gobbler, is.
It's back. It's totally back. Check out last week's episode. So, okay. So let's pick up here with Devin Sawa. So Anton makes his way down the stairs. He goes to pour some cereal. He's like, Mom! Cereal's empty. And he goes to get some dog food. And, Mom! Dog food's gone. Just puts back on his earphones. And he goes downstairs, lights up some incense candles. Man, JD, were you ever into the incense?
No. Just always smelled funky to me.
I loved it. I used to light those up all the time.
Yeah, because you used to also light something else up all the time.
My pipe?
You didn't even beat around the bush for that.
No, I actually didn't have a pipe. My buddy did, though. And I did smoke a lot of pot in high school. So that came the incense candles. And then, yeah, my parents were like, what's going on here? It smells like Woodstock. Like, I don't know.
So, it smells like Woodstock.
So he calls up the dealer, who tells him that this isn't Domino's, bitch. So he has to leave and go get dressed and put on his basically like a pair of pajamas and pink slippers. And then let's listen to our first clip here.
That's chronic. Oh, I'm sorry, man. This phone is cash. So I came all the way over here. You said you was holding.
I didn't say what I was holding.
That's messed up, man.
I hear if you combine nutmeg and oregano, you can get pretty wasted.
Anton, all you do is smoke pot and watch TV all day. Don't get me wrong, that's what life is all about, but don't you think you should have some ambition, like a goal?
Yeah. I mean, my dream life would be to lie around all day in bed and watch TV while somehow Brad delivers me food and shit.
Yeah, until your parents kick your oily ass out.
I haven't seen my parents in a couple days.
Maybe they're dead. Party at Anton's.
What are you doing?
I'm just saying, with the killer on the loose, you can't rule out murder.
What killer?
Don't you watch the news?
I hate that fucking show.
Oh, man. Our little town is in the national spotlight. Local mailman? Iced. Barmaid at the bowling alley? Iced. And don't tell me you haven't heard about the Feldstein twins.
What, they got caught jerking off in the milkshake maker again?
Iced times two. Last night when they were working the drive-thru at the Burger Jungle?
Damn.
JD, thoughts on our other characters here, Mick and Nub.
Good old Nub. P-Nub, P-Nub, Nubby, P-Nubalopolis. It's a fantastic little mixture of just the stoner community where we have Eldon and we've got Seth and we've got Devin. And I really feel like they probably had a great time filming this movie, the three of them.
I'd like to imagine, yeah. It had to be a good time. They're all around the same age. They got Jessica Alba walking around. Can't be that bad.
No. I would get paid to be a part of that party.
Yeah. And speaking of which, we have our first shot of Molly, who comes cruising by on her motorcycle. Molly, of course, is played by Jessica Alba. This is our first Alba film. I don't know that we're going to have a lot more. I don't know when we'll talk about her again. JD, are you a fan of Jessica Alba and her work?
I think she's a very skilled and very capable actress for sure. The only thing that I disagree with that she has done is Fantastic Four. She's not a great Sue Storm.
Okay. I think that's a fair criticism. So Anton decides to finally go talk to Molly. Nub is like, hey, recommends, like, why don't you put some pants on there, bud, if you're going to go over there? And he's like, ah, good idea. So he puts on Nub's pants and climbs out through the window in his pink sandals. As he leaves, we find out that Nub was actually holding on to some weed. They find it in the thing, and he's like, ah, look here, I got a whole bag. So they fire up the bong. Anton grabs the lyric book in the road and starts going through it. And he's about to knock on the door when Molly opens up and thanks him for returning the book. And Anton is just like, ah, take the book. And he just storms off. Not real smooth here by Anton. Finally getting the courage to do nothing. What'd you think?
He means well. His heart's in the right place. Yeah. His penis is in the right place. His fluffy slippers are in the right place. But he's just a misguided youth. I really feel like this probably is how you identified in high school, is it not, Kyle, as a misguided youth?
No. No, captain of the basketball team. I identified well.
You were the captain of the b-ball team?
Yeah, I sure was.
From the bench? As the sixth man?
Come on now. Come on now.
This is a saucy episode.
We all know that's not true. Well, next, we are at the jail cell where we meet Debbie LeCure. She's dressed as a nun here, and the police officer actually calls her Sister Liquor, which I don't know why that made me laugh. It's so stupid, but I did laugh. And then we find out quickly she's not actually a nun. She's trying to chase down whatever it is that is killing people. We don't actually know yet. And we know it has something to do with a hand, because when she entered the jail cell, she saw the guy's mangled hand and was like, damn it. And then she takes off, gets into her, what is this, like a RV on wheels? I don't even know what to call her vehicle. And then she goes into, she's got like a map on the wall, and she traces all the locations, connects the dots, and it forms a satanic symbol. JD, from a writing standpoint, what do you think of the setup here?
It's a little out of left field. You have to think and consider that you're setting up certain roadblocks and certain impasses for yourself as a writer. You introduce your characters. We start off with this big bang of a scene. We get into our stoners. We get into the love interest. And then we totally just run off the rails and have this out of the blue Vivica A. Fox and her traveling RV of the devil. Like, it's just so random. Like, you need to have done a better job of establishing. I almost feel like if you started the movie with her coming onto a scene where she is uncovering a murder, so we know who she is and we're tied to her chasing the murder down, as opposed to this passive way of bringing her into the jail. Like, oh, this isn't the guy. Like,
that's a good point. Also, our second Vivica A. Fox film, Independence Day, in our archives.
David!
So Anton is about to meet a few local cops in the next scene here that he actually used to go to school with. Let's listen to a clip.
Over!
Anton Tobias.
You got a reason for prowling around this neighborhood?
Yeah, I live here. Since when is it against a lot of grocery shop?
Hey, I know you guys.
Yeah, you guys were seniors when I was a freshman.
Yeah. Let's talk about high school, Anton.
Yeah, you and all your stoner friends zipping around on your skateboards. Thought you were too cool for us, huh? Did you ever, even once, invite us to get high behind the gym?
You were dorks.
JD, I love the ending where he's like, hey, you guys were dorks. What'd you think of this scene?
We have a fantastic appearance by Sean Whalen, who I love as an actor, from everything from That Thing You Do to People Under the Stairs. He's such a great character performer, and he's just sort of just snuck in there very unsuspiciously. It's fantastic to see him, and he does a great job.
Yeah. Also, love him in Twister too. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of good movies. So Antoine tries to score from the cops, and they make him empty his pants, and they steal his dollar bill, and then they smell his empty bag, and he's like, I know my rights. You guys can't write me up for a empty baggie. So they write him a ticket for $200 for littering, which is hilarious because later he rolls up the ticket and tries to smoke it with oregano and nutmeg. And then when he goes to smoke it, he actually starts like hearing some creaking throughout the house, which makes him turn the TV up loud. And then he lights up this makeshift pot and just starts coughing uncontrollably, spitting up. There's actually the scene where he goes and pours like the water in his mouth in the sink and rinses out with soap. He decided to use real soap there. Went character actor on us. That's him literally gagging on film. And then I love the song in the background here. The lyrics are, what a retard, as he's trying to drink water. I don't think that would fly in today's cinema. And then he starts making a sandwich next, but doesn't notice the bloody knife until he's taken a bite out of it. Is it bologna and mayonnaise?
I think it looks like a good bologna, Sam.
Okay. Yeah, not a bologna or mayonnaise guy, I gotta be honest.
What, you do mustard?
No, no mustard. Meat and cheese and maybe some hot sauce.
That's not a sandwich, that's a train wreck.
I'm a simple man. What can I
say? Yeah, you are.
I'm a simple kind of man.
Screaming cowboy.
So we cut to Anton and Dookie the dog. Anton is using the dog as kind of a bit of a shield. He pushes him out into the hallway. And then he grabs an umbrella to protect himself when he sees a figure in the door window. He starts running upstairs to hide under the sheets. A little Kevin McAllister here, if you will. And then he accidentally turns on the alarm radio, which makes him look at the ceiling and sees the I'm under the bed. So he runs down the stairs, trips on the blood. And we see the dead parents were actually standing in the window with pumpkins on their heads. So he crashes into them and they fall to the ground. And then he goes outside and sees Nub and Mick and they kind of scare him a little bit. And he tells them he needs them to go inside. He's got something to show them. Pop That Coochie's playing. Love that song. Pop That Coochie. Ooh. Good song for weddings. Although the grandmas don't seem to like it too much for some reason.
They're only grandmas because they have.
That's right? True. That's right? True. So yeah, so the Pop the Coochie music video is distracting the two morons here. Mick finds a clue in Anton's mom's hand, and it's a gray t-shirt, and it matches perfectly to the tear in Anton's, and Anton looks down and sees it, so he kind of starts backing away from the guys. And then he sees his name written on the floor in blood. It just says Ant, and Nub's like, holy shit, they were killed by ants. And then Mick sees the tear in the shirt, so he like reaches out and matches it perfectly. It says the killer is wearing your shirt, man. And then Anton sees his hand is just glowing blue. He says, no, man, the killer's wearing me. So Mick goes to call 911, and he says, something's wrong with my friend. He must have taken some nutmeg or something. So Anton follows him into the kitchen. And he cracks open a beer bottle and then jams it into his forehead, killing Mick. And then Nub gets up and tries to leave. And Anton's like, hey, man, it was an accident. I can't control this thing. So he chases after Nub, who goes running down the basement door. And Anton yells down, you can't get out that way. And he tells Nub he has no control over his hand. He's like, you just need to go run back up the stairs. Get out of here. I'll try to hold it off. Nub gets all the way up to the top of the staircase. And Anton grabs a saw and throws it right through his neck, and it sends the head rolling down the stairs. And as it stops, he just goes, cool. JD, what do you think of these two death scenes?
I really feel like this is where the majority of the budget went.
Yes.
Because these are fantastic. It's, at least from a writing standpoint, it's a little off-centered, the fact that now all of a sudden we're throwing in this killer hand motif.
Right.
And we've established that there's a killer in town, so there's a lot of Scream type vibes going on, but this is why it's a parody, it's a horror comedy, it's not a straight delicious horror movie. But then all of a sudden his hand is possessed, and we never really find out why. Like, we get a gist of, you know, idle hands are a devil's playground, as you said earlier, but it's just sort of like, it's just so overly random.
Right. So Anton sits down to watch TV, and he's got to kind of fight against his hand with the remote control. And I love that every show that the hand turns on revolves around a hand, and it eventually grabs the cat and just like whips him around and throws him all the way out the window. And then he's got to go across the street to Molly's house. Real quick, we should talk about this neighborhood real quick. Did you know this was actually filmed in the exact same neighborhood as the original Halloween?
No. Haddonfield?
Haddonfield.
I did not know that.
That's pretty good Donald Pleasance by me. I'm going to pat myself on the back.
Mine was better, but pat yourself. I know you like to pat yourself.
Yeah, not bad. So he's across the street at Molly's house, and his hand goes up to the doorbell, makes him ring it, and he rings it like 20 times. And then Molly comes out wearing just a belly shirt and some like spandex underwear. I don't know. It's like she's going to volleyball practice. JD, I'm not mad at the scene, but they're really playing up her sex appeal here, which is a little uncomfortable to even talk about because she's 17 here.
Yeah, I feel like they misuse her character and the actress and her ability for the sake of playing into parody. Because yeah, she's essentially playing a role in a part, and that part being just the love, lust object.
And this is just the beginning. It goes a lot further than this, as we will talk about. Anton continues to fight with his hand, and he tells her that he's not himself today, and she tells him, that's okay, I can see you're shy. Why don't you come inside? He tries to say no, but his hand shakes his head yes. And then inside the bedroom, he tries to play it cool, and he admits to reading lyrics, and she's kind of mad, but then she's kind of like, oh, that's cool that you read them and memorized them. And then Molly goes over to turn off some music, and as she bent over, Anton goes ahead and grabs a full hand of booty, and she's like, wow, I'm impressed. I would never thought you had the guts to do that. And then they start making out, and then as they're doing that, the hand is trying to choke her at the same time. So he ties his hand up to the bedpost, and she says that that's kinky, and then they go back to making out. JD, what do you think of this scene?
Does Wayne Brady have to choke a bitch?
Before Anton leaves that night, he and Molly make plans for him to stop by the next day, and they're going to meet up around 7 o'clock for the dance. So we cut to his backyard where Anton is burying the bodies. Now, JD, this seems like a terrible idea. If you're going to kill someone, maybe don't bury them right in your backyard.
I feel like a lot of serial killers, accidental murderers make the same mistake. If you're going to bury a body, you, one, have to make sure the hole is deep enough.
Right.
How many people get busted for shallow graves? Like, you already did the hard work of killing somebody. No, dig an extra 6 to 8 feet. Get that body deep down into that crust. Or burn it. Or eat it.
I mean, I'm not trying to give anybody ideas here, but it seems like you would dump the body somewhere else and get yourself an alibi. Just bury him right behind your back door. And then everybody's like, why is all the grass missing right here? This is odd. Wonder where he put them.
And a little shape of a body, like, what's going on here?
So Anton is apologizing to his parents and his best friends, and he tells the guys that he'll never forget all the times, you know, where we sat around and watched TV and got stoned, and all the other times where that's pretty much all we ever did. And Anton hears the voice of Mick in the dirt, and Mick is asking if he can hear him. And they're kind of talking back and forth, and Anton just lays on the ground, and he's about to light up when Mick's arm comes from the ground and grabs him. It's a pretty ridiculous scene, all in all, but I really enjoyed it. JD, what do you think?
It is off the wall. You know, the whole explanation about why they come back and, you know, and they don't care that they got murdered, but it's hard to bite into, right? Yeah. Am I mistaken for saying that?
No, I think that's right.
I just, I don't know. I don't mean to poo-poo on this movie at all because I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's completely fun, but what are the rules to the universe that they're living in?
That's a good point. You got to have rules. Scream in our archives. Now, Anton wakes up the next morning. He thinks it was all a dream, and he kind of makes his way down the stairs. And he finds the guy sitting on the couch, and he's like relieved. He's like, oh my gosh. Guys, hey, he comes running down there and he sees Well, Nub's head is just sitting on the couch, and Mick is trying to throw cheese balls into his mouth. And in the kitchen, we see Nub's body trying to move around, and he's trying to throw, I think it's Pringles he's trying to throw down his throat or his open wound. Let's listen to another clip here.
Selfish, Anton. No one else's parents are dead.
No. Not why are you here? I mean, what are you guys like flesh-eating zombies, back from hell, ready to exact revenge? Is that it?
Why would we go to hell?
Duh.
We're not bad. It's not like we're good or anything, but at least we don't go around killing people.
Yeah, I didn't kill anybody on purpose, okay?
Yeah, well, we weren't in hell. I mean, there was this big, bright, white light at the end of a long tunnel, right? And there were all these chicks' voices and that music.
Music? Yeah, kind of uncool music, like Enya. And these chicks' voices, they were saying, come to us, come turn to light.
So what happened?
I figured, fuck it. I mean, it was really far.
JD, from a writing standpoint, I feel like if we had to like make a note of where this maybe took a wrong turn, this kind of feels like it's it. What do you think?
It's hard because you have to understand, one, the movie that you're writing, two, the universe that you're in, and three, the audience that you're hoping to hit. And this movie changes gears so many times between, you know, each and every one of those focal points. And it's just so, it just, much like how you and I have been, I've just been missing and needing to recalibrate because you're an asshole and I hate you. Mm. And, you know, your comedy's not good tonight. And obviously right. Everybody likes me. Nobody likes you. I don't know. That's kind of, I guess, indicative to this film. And it's so good in so many points, but because it doesn't pay enough attention to its other points, it just sort of becomes, you know, like a chili without beans.
Ooh, that's awful. Always gotta have beans.
And that's another t-shirt.
Beans make
chili without beans.
That's also a t-shirt. Anton asks if they know anything about Satan, and they're like, oh, we don't know anything about Satan, but we know someone that does. And that's when we meet Randy next, who's trying to comfort a girl who's laying flowers at the twins' death location. And Anton tells him that he needs to talk to him. And Randy's like not happy because he's like, dude, you just cock blocked me. I was trying to get with this girl, and he turns around and she's gone. So Randy's all mad, so he gets into his Ford and he drives right over the top of the flowers and into the drive-thru line. So Anton runs inside the fast food restaurant here and takes over as the drive-thru attendant, which is where we get the nice cameo here from Tom DeLong, former Blink-182 frontman. I thought this was a nice little moment for him. And then he asks Randy for help in the drive-thru line, and Randy tells him that idle hands are the devil's playground. So we cut to a Rob Zombie music video. So we see Anton is knitting. I don't even know what he's knitting. He's just knitting to keep his hands busy in the next scene. JD, what do you think of the line from Randy here about the idle hands or the devil's playground? It's kind of like the whole setup of the movie.
Yeah, I get it, and I really respect it. It sort of puts a great little circle and a bow and a ribbon in all of that. The fact that we have a young teen stoner who does nothing and becomes possessed by the devil because he does. So it puts purpose to, one, the title of the movie, two, the action of the main character, and then three, his purpose for living. So I like it. I appreciate it.
The local cops are called to Anton's house next for a noise ordinance, and they say, oh shit, Anton's the killer. So they bust in, and right away they shoot Mick, and Mick's like, I was about to say you should listen to the cops, but now I think you should kill him. Anton's like, you need to cuff me. They're like, no, drop the knitting needles. Like, cuff me. Drop the nose. Cuff me. Cuff me. And finally, he just grabs the knitting needle and jabs it right through the cop's head and then stun guns the other cop in the face, which electrocutes him to death. Anton says he can't do this anymore. JD, two more dead. What do you think about these death scenes?
These are fantastic because it's a very intense scene. Like, I loved this movie for that very reason, where it focuses on the intensity of the situation, and the situation being he's succumbed to the devil's hand. Like, he can't control what he's doing, and then wham, knitting needle to the neck, and then
pretty
stung.
Brutal.
It's brutal as hell. Like, this is more believable to me than the previous death scenes.
Okay. Anton has an idea next that will solve his problem. He's going to just cut off the hand. They ask what's going to happen to the other hand. He's like, oh, the left. The left's a keeper, man. That's how I pack my bowl. I change the channel, you know, relieve some tension. And then Mick grabs the cutting knife. He's going to help cut it off. He's like, oh, look at me. I'm Leatherface. But he pulls the cord off the wall. So Anton tries to cut his hand off with a big old chopping knife. He misses like 100 times. So he has a Nub bite down on his hand, and he chops that sucker right off, man. I love that Nub just like spits it out too. He's like, it just spits the hand on the ground. And then Mick runs over, grabs this hot iron, which just happened to be turned on and ready to go, and burns the stump. Like, haven't you ever seen ER? Gotta stop the bleeding, man. So the guys leave to go get some supplies to clean up the wound. And that's when Anton passes out and he sees on the floor in blood, bad move, Anton. So he grabs the knife and starts looking for the hand. And we see Molly has shown up at the house. She's all dressed and ready to go to the dance. So he tells her, you got to wait outside. I'm almost ready. And the hand attacks him, but he manages to toss it in the microwave. And he sits there watching it burn, and it's just spits blood everywhere, and Anton's like, fry! And finally, the blood just shoots out everywhere, and Anton's like, ah, gross. So he rushes to the front door to stop her from entering the house, and she asks, what's going on? What are you going to the dance as here? And he's like, a fast food employee who cuts off his own hand? JD, what'd you think of the scene?
Yeah, so you gave a big whopper of a scene there, and the first thing that I want to touch on is the actual part of him cutting off his hand.
Yes.
When the fact that I think is really unique is idle hands, devil's playground. We're talking and operating completely in a biblical sense. If you read the Bible, if you don't read the Bible, if you know what the Bible is, if you distrust the Bible, whatever, Matthew 5:30 from King James Version. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off.
Oh, wow.
So the reason why he cuts off his hand is biblically charged. From a writing standpoint, it's very well researched and thought out, and that's why he does it, and it's completely tied back into Christian lore.
Where'd you learn that? Bible school? Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, because that's where we...
Makes asshole. Sense. No, I thought that's a great point by you, man. Well done. I'm sure you had that ready to go, so I love it. And yeah, you're right. It is the right hand. So it's definitely biblical. Definitely biblical.
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 Biblical A-Fox.
Nub and Mick return. Mick fixes the whole head issue for Nub. He just sticks a giant like prong thing that you use for the grill and sticks it into the head and then just jams it into the rest of the body. And I was like, ooh, that's better. And then they open up the microwave to cook a burrito, and the hand jumps out of the microwave, goes right through the window, and both guys are like, whoa. And then they just turn around and toss the burrito in the bloody microwave and cook it. We cut to Molly and Anton. Anton tells her he needs to take care of a couple things. Something came up with his parents. And, you know, I'll just meet you at the dance. So we smash back to Nub, who's eating the burrito. And I love that Mick's like, no, you go ahead. And he's just waiting for him to eat this burrito, and it just starts oozing out of his neck. I thought the effects for this were actually really cool. And then Anton returns back, and he's all pissed because they let the hand out. What'd you think of the scene?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of the budget went to focusing on these two characters, their death, their makeup, and then the practical effects of just watching burrito ooze out of the slit.
Yeah. We're at the bowling alley next, where Debbie is looking around for the hand, I assume, and Randy's hitting on her, and he says he can help her find a ball that fits her just right. Let's listen to a clip here where Debbie describes the origin of the hand.
I come from a long line of Druidic priestesses sworn to fight a certain evil force that possesses the laziest fuck-up it can find. It will kill as many people as possible, and then drag a free soul into the netherworld.
That's some weedy shit there.
Yeah. Here's the kicker. I actually have the one thing that can stop this from happening. I just need to find the poor bastard whose hand is possessed.
Weird. Hey, earlier today, this guy Anton, he told me that his hand was doing stuff that he didn't want it to do.
Don't you fuck with me, mister.
He's up there, kitten. I'm telling you the truth. This guy was freaked.
Show me where he lives.
JD, what'd you think of this scene?
So, I don't know. My response is twofold. It's hilarious to think that Anton is the laziest soul. Like, you take the whole culmination of everybody on Earth and then, nope, here it is. This is the dude. This is the laziest dude. Let's go get him. The other thing is the fact that it just sort of like the hand possesses him and then takes an innocent soul. Like the exposition and in the writing of just like not letting us see or experience anything, but just telling us what it is kind of lazy.
Okay.
Which maybe that's intentional. Maybe there's a meta play to be had for this film. And its lazy writing is indicative of the laziness that Idle Hands represents. So maybe this is the smartest film ever.
Maybe. That's an interesting take. Highly unlikely. So Debbie and Randy are in her bus and on the way to Anton's. Again, it could be an RV. I don't know what it is. Anton is looking for the hand in the backyard, and in the backyard, he finds a message on the fence that says, "She's mine." So he runs into the house and he tells the guys that he's got to get to Molly. Anton actually refuses weed from Mick here. So he actually starts to give a speech, but Mick cuts him off. It says, "Hey man, no Kevin Costner speech here, please."
I wondered what you would say about that because we know you're a huge K-Cos fan.
I do love me some Costner. I sure do. I even like Waterworld. Not many people do. Again, well, underrated future episode. It's got to be.
It has to be.
And then Debbie and Randy pull up to the house and see Anton and the guys are stealing his Ford, which Randy's not happy about. Debbie races over the stop, but Anton doesn't see her and just rams into her, sends her flying like 20 feet across the street. They pause for a second. They're like, "Do you hear something?" "Nah." And they just drive off. So we cut to the dance. A couple's going at it in their vehicle here, getting hot and heavy, steaming up the windows. When we see the hand slip into the car through the window, we get some boob shots here where the hand actually starts rubbing all over and then kills them both. Pretty gnarly death scene too. JD, what'd you think?
It is a gnarly death scene. And, you know, I if I'm not mistaken, the same actor that plays the hand here also plays the hand in Adam's Family.
So he's made a whole living on being a hand?
I think so.
That's pretty awesome. Good for his hand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, many a porn star have made a living based off their hand and their peen. Okay. So, you know, whatever. I would like to think, like, I get so frustrated in thinking that, like, how much power can a hand actually have? Like, I want to get down to the mathematical equation that says how much force and velocity that the hand can really give. It's like Chucky. It's like, can Chucky really slam down the knife with enough force to hurt you?
Seems like he can. He's done quite a few.
I feel like it would just be like, "Oh, well, your arms are 6 inches long and
your T-Rex hands."
It's like T-Rex, you can't hands. Even, you're not strong enough to even hold the knife.
Right.
You poked me. There's a drop of blood. Let me just go ahead and grab you by the hair and throw you in the fireplace.
The guys arrive at the dance and they immediately go to the car and the guy falls out and Anton's like, "It's here." So inside the dance, the band is playing. And Molly is kind of dancing by herself, and she's getting upset that Anton isn't at the dance yet. And the band here is Offspring. And they're performing a couple songs here. They're doing I Want to Be Sedated, which is originally by the Ramones. And then they're doing a song called Beheaded. JD, were you a fan of The Offspring at all?
Pretty fly for a white guy. Burr, 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 burr.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah,
song.
I was. I love their early work. I love their pop work. I think they were a fantastic band. Like, they were pretty badass.
Shout out to my other buddy, Justin, who used to come out to The Offspring song for his wrestling theme music when we did Backyard Wrestling.
When he said come out to, I was expecting a much different story.
So we see the principal killed next here. The hand, no pun intended, comes through his pants as he's talking dirty on the phone and kills him. Again, you can't write this stuff. It's just, it's awesome at this point. Anton and Debbie finally meet. She says that she can help, and he's like, oh, really? You can help? And she pulls out a knife and just tries to kill him. And then Anton fights her off, but Randy stops him and tells him that nobody touches my Ford, and then punches him in the gut. And Debbie's about to put an end to Anton when he says, the evil's left. Here, look, I got a stump. I cut it off. And she's like, oh, you cut it off and let it out. She's actually mad that he cut off his hand. So we find out that it's after his girlfriend, and Debbie says they have 6 minutes to stop it from getting to Molly. We cut back to the dance. The Offspring's rocking out, and Anton goes on stage and yells, there's a psycho hand. And he's, everybody stop. And of course, nobody believes him. So the lead singer comes back out and he's like, come on, kid, you've had your fun. Now get out. And then the hand drops down from the ceiling and peels back his scalp. It's pretty awesome.
Ew.
And then just chaos ensues. Nub and Mick are just, I love that they're just sitting at a table while everyone just runs out. And Nub's like, man, I was about to get some. Molly and her friend decide to try and sneak through the vents, which is clearly just a scene so we can see Jessica Alba crawling on her hands and knees, is it not?
Well, maybe for you, I appreciated the tension.
Yeah, you sure did. They get to a big ceiling fan, and Molly stops the fan with her heel, ties up a rope, and kind of lowers herself down into the school hallway. Mick and Nub are also in the vent now. Nub hears Tanya yell, and he's like, oh, it's Tanya. Let's go save her. And then the hand comes from nowhere and attacks Tanya, wrapping her her neck around the rope, hanging her from the ceiling fan. Removes the heel, stopping the fan, and it spirals her up. Blood just goes everywhere. It just splats all over poor Molly. And then Mick and Nub arrive at the scene, and they're just like, oh. Nub's like, this is just unfair. JD, what'd you think about this scene?
It is a lot of blood, isn't it?
It's a ton of blood.
It's so unfortunate. It's funny that a zombie, is he a zombie? Is that what we're calling Nub?
Sure,
and
yeah.
Like, and, oh, that's unfortunate, knowing full well that she potentially is going to cross over to the afterlife and has the option to come back and they can have wicked zombie sex.
Yeah,
but
knows?
He only wants to have zombie human sex.
I don't know what he's thinking. I'd love to get Alden Hansen on the podcast, so that'd be a fun episode. Talk some mighty
ducks.
Talk some idle hands.
I'll message Sean Whalen right now.
Oh, he'd be great too. That'd be awesome, actually.
I am friends with him on Facebook.
Let's do it. So Anton is looking for Molly next, who's been knocked out by the hand, somewhere in the main office area. The hand attacks Anton disguised as a hand puppet. It's getting a little ridiculous here. He's about to finally smash the hand when Mick and Nub drop the ceiling tile on his head and kind of knock him out. And then we hear Molly yelling for help, and she's tied up to the top of the car in shop class. So Anton runs over and tries to like pull off the ropes, but instead he pulls off pretty much all of her dress. And Nub says, oh, I bet she wins best costume. The car is now raising toward the ceiling, and she's about to get smashed. They can't stop the hand, so Mick runs over to some device on the table and takes off the covering. And it's a giant tailpipe bong. He says, man, those shop class boys are geniuses. Nub puts some weed in and lights it up. And Mick says, this is important. It's for strength. So Anton takes a giant hit of the bong. And meanwhile, Molly's like, seriously? Come on. But instead, he's smart about it because he fills up and then blows it into the puppet, and the hand passes out and the lever stops literally as her nose is hitting the cement. Mick says, that's some one-hit shit right there. But the hand comes back to life a second later, leaps toward Anton, and that's when Debbie enters and throws her dagger right through the hand, and it goes stabbing right into the chest of Mick, and it just flickers and disappears. And Mick says, that's it? No explosions? No hellfire? And Debbie's like, well, my work is done. Now it's time for the ritualistic sex. You coming? And Randy's like, ooh, you are a pistol. They finally get Molly free, and she gets off the car in basically just bra and panties. They start making out. Anton grabs another handful of that booty. And then Nub says, weed saves the day again. They accidentally lower the car right on top of Anton, smashing him. And then they exit through the light. Don't know what to say about this. JD, we're going to get to the hospital in the last scene here. What do you think about this whole saving Molly scene?
I mean, what the hell can we say?
Did they run? It feels like they just ran out of ideas. They're like, fuck, we got to finish this movie.
It most certainly was. It's just, I don't know anything about the writing team. From a directorial standpoint, there's tension. It's mounting. She looks fantastic. Devin easy, Sawa easy saves 70. Wistful. For some reason, they get a hand stoned.
Yeah.
I mean, what did it breathe in from?
I don't know. Can you believe they're still working, these writers?
Hey, man. Whatever.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, the garage door opens. The guys leave through the bright light, and then we get back to the hospital, and Molly's signing his cast, and apparently he's okay. We find out that she says, can't believe you blew off heaven to kick it with me. You're the coolest. Mick and Nub appear as angels, and they say they're his guardian angels. We hear Santeria playing in the background. Very good song. Love it. And then Nub says that they're supposed to monitor him. And as they leave, Anton tells them thanks. He's like, hey, could you guys turn off the lights? And as they do, Anton sees the message and it says, I'm under the bed. And then we cut to the hallway where Nub and Mick say, do you think we should tell him that we painted that on there? The movie ends and the credits roll. JD, thoughts on the ending?
This movie is so frustrating and confusing and satisfying at the same time, right?
It, at times, I thought this was a very good movie in parts, but it's such a clusterfuck.
It really, clusterfuck. Much like Kyle's face, this movie is a clusterfuck.
No.
Oh, you said yep.
Nope. I disagree.
Nope.
My mom says I have a face of an angel, and that is it.
Yeah, well, you should hear what your mom says about me.
Ah, damn it. I set myself up for that one.
Oh, Mrs. Autry's a saint. She's a saint.
She's a saint. Okay. So the movie was not a commercial or critical success or probably a VHS success. Basically, it's never had any success. JD, 20 years later, do you think it would be better if it came out today? Would it be better received? Where would you place this movie?
No, because the soundtrack and the actors are the backbone.
Right.
And it's for you. It's for me. It's for our friends. It's for our roommates. It's for all of us. Those that lived and breathed and survived the 90s. If they try to remake it, we would rather just watch the original. Like, this is
right.
A product of the night. Like, come on, Offspring.
Instead, they have, like, Post Malone.
Yeah, what would be the value of that? That would just be, it misses the point.
All in all, though, I thought it was a fun movie until the last 5 minutes or so. The ending's just a little bit of a head scratch and just clearly another way to see Jessica Alba's ass. I mean, they guess they did what they could. We're going to be back next week with some all new episodes. We've actually got a couple special episodes planned. We've got a top 5 episode coming out. And then we're going to be previewing all the summer blockbusters as we get ready for just a huge May. JD, should we tease a little bit of May, what's coming down for the month?
Let's tease May.
Star Wars Episode 1. We're doing it. It's coming out. We're going to drop that episode on May the 4th. Be with you. That's our first episode of the month. Really looking forward to it. And then we've got Dave from Dave's Pop Culture. He's going to be on the episode, on the podcast for a special episode. And then we've got one more big one planned. I'm going to save that one for later. We got to leave them wanting something more, JD. So we will stay away from the last episode of the month. But yeah, big things are planned. Make sure you guys support us. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, YouTube, SoundCloud, anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us. Drop us a 5-star review. We're on social media, at Back in Time Pod. Tweet us, retweet us, like us. Instagram as well, Facebook. And then we're also on the web at backintimepod.com. Check out our website, which I'm still renovating, so give me some time to work on it. But it's newly up to date. Hopefully by the time you listen to this, I've got some update on the t-shirt. So it is in the process. JD, I don't think I've even updated you on this, but we're going to have our first round of t-shirts coming out. Probably going to do 25 of them. So it's going to be pretty limited. So you're going to be able to get your hands on some Back in Time Pod swag, I guess we can call it. That's what the cool kids would call it. So I'm looking forward to that. Again, JD's at Unjust Justin. I'm at KAutry29. We're out of time. Time to get back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. See you next week.
Lest we not forget that Kyle votes Post Malone over Rob Zombie.